Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Iditapod. It's a podcast about, you know, the Iditarod. And if you don't know, the Iditarod is a 1,000-mile sled dog race across Alaska. This podcast is a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we get too far down the trail, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
52 teams have been mushing off and on through the night after taking off from Willow and the Iditarod's ceremonial start in Anchorage the day before. This morning, Monday, as I'm recording this, the front-running teams are already into the Finger Lake checkpoint. One of our trail reporters, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, is out on the trail while KNOM's Ben Matheson is on his way. They are trying to catch some of these fast dog teams. First into the Finger Lake checkpoint, about 100 miles into the race, a little before 4 this morning, was Willow's Linwood Fiedler, top 10 finisher last year. Fiedler and a handful of other teams stopped at Finger Lake for some rest, but not Bethel's Peter Kaiser. And I think Alberta musher Jason Campo and maybe even Nicholas Petit, last year's second place finisher from Girdwood. I say that with some uncertainty because the last time I looked at the GPS tracker at Iditarod.com, it showed Petit running with Kaiser well out of Finger Lake at last check. But the checkpoint times at Iditarod.com show Campo having left and Nick Petit still at Finger Lake. We'll probably get all that cleared up right around the time. It doesn't matter anymore. Either way, these teams are heading into the Alaska Range and some of the most technical sections of the Iditarod Trail, which are some of the most technical sections in all of dog mushing. Here's how rookie Jessica Klaka put it at the ceremonial start in Anchorage.
We're just going to take it one checkpoint at a time. And, you know, the sections that we all hear about, my husband keeps saying, they're not that long of sections. You're going to be fine. When I keep talking, well, what about the steps? He's like, they're not that long. You know, it's going to be a few minutes of sort of terror and then you'll be fine.
The steps she's talking about are the Happy River steps, which is a funny name because a lot of mushers are unhappy when they go over them. It's a set of steep switchbacks dropping down to the Happy River before mushers head uphill again into Rainy Pass. It's a notorious spot that as teams whip around those corners can cause sleds to tip and mushers, sometimes they go flying. Items get strewn along the trail. You don't want to lose any valuable equipment, a lot of which is required at each checkpoint. If you dump your sled and you lose all of the trays that you feed your dogs with, you're going to have to come up with some other plan. This is why mushers like to make run-rest plans so they'll have plenty of daylight for that section and why, like Kaiser and whomever else, mushers might be blowing through Finger Lake to get on those difficult technical steps during the daylight hours. Last night, there were definitely different strategies coming into focus as Iditarod mushers started arriving at the Squintna Roadhouse checkpoint. That is about 83 miles into the race, so earlier on. The second checkpoint, and one of the first opportunities mushers end up taking a real rest after departing the Willow restart 83 miles earlier. Nenana's Jesse Holmes pulled in first, close to 9 p.m., with a substantial lead over a cluster of racers that were bunched up behind him. And even in spite of the warmer temperatures, Holmes says the trail was holding up pretty well.
Definitely it was warm beginning of the day, but it didn't affect him as much as I thought it would. Whenever we started, I said, boy, this heat's going to be intense, and just started stopping, you know, about every 20 minutes and let them cool down for about a couple minutes. And
dogs all doing good?
Yeah, they're doing great.
Good. Sound good to me so far.
Say again? Eating? Oh, they ate three times. They ate real good.
Jesse was talking as he was tossing straw down for his dogs and giving them a nice meaty meal for their dinner. You can hear that there. It was 40 minutes before the next musher's headlamp appeared past a bend in the river. Matt Hall pulled in just long enough to explain to race checkers that he wasn't actually going to stay in Squintna.
Well, I am only going like a half mile. In 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours from now, this place is going to be like a rock concert with 50 teams in here. So I'm going to go where dogs and people can sleep. So just around the corner.
After that, mushers started arriving every few minutes. Nick Petit's dogs practically sprinted in. Jeff King parked his team and began his methodical process of giving them water. And Anna Barrington seemed almost disappointed to have to put the brakes on a full, healthy-looking string of 14 dogs.
Anna, are you going to stay with us tonight?
Yeah. For the first time in 7 years, 8 years,
perfect.
I've never stayed. This musher will stay with us.
Barrington, one of a set of twins mushing the Iditarod, says her sister rested in Squintna last year, and now she's experimenting with the early opportunity for rest.
I'll try something different. I mean, if you keep doing the same thing all the time, maybe it won't get any better, so I thought I would try it. Hersey did it one time. She's like, maybe we should try it again, so sounded like a good idea. Kind of changes the game plan a little further down the way, too, so hopefully it does something good. I mean, if you, I don't know, it's so early, you know, you do different stuff so early.
Barrington and others are hoping a few hours rest early along the river may give them a boost as they spend the next day climbing up and over into the pass in the Alaska Range. So it can be a little rough and tumble out there, and your sled can get beat up even. That brings us to today's listener question from Tom in Montana.
Hey guys, this is Tom from Lolo, Montana. I'm going to fire off a couple questions about these sleds. What kind of materials historically and today do they build these sleds with? Do any mushers build their own from the ground up or just make modifications on a pre-manufactured type of deal? Is there any consideration to reducing the weight of the sled? All right, well, thanks for answering any of these questions. Appreciate it, guys.
Well, Tom, thanks for the great question. So back in the day, big freight sleds that were used for moving things as heavy as gold would be made out of pretty thick pieces of wood. And that's the most available material that was around at the time. And they weren't looking for a lightweight race sled. They just needed something sturdy to carry stuff. The musher maybe wouldn't even ride on the sled. It was just for carrying the load as the dogs pulled it sort of slowly across the trail. Nowadays, sled designers are using all kinds of different materials, everything from hockey sticks. You'll see like Easton hockey sticks making up the frame of a sled. You'll see some with carbon fiber, Kevlar, fiberglass, all of that stuff. The sled bags can be made out of all kinds of tough material. The materials kind of depend on how you want to use this sled and, of course, the size of the sled. If you just want a little sled to kick around on with your three dogs or whatever, that'll be a smaller sled that doesn't need to carry as much stuff. And of course, we've got all these mushers out on the Iditarod Trail in much bigger sleds. They've got to carry supplies. They might even need to put a dog or two in the bag. So the sleds are bigger. They also, they shoot for a balance between lightweight and big. So these days, the sleds are made out of some of those more space-age materials, you may call them. Cody Strath, he is a sled designer with Dog Paddle Designs. You can find that at dogpaddledesigns.com. He and his wife have raced in the Yukon Quest and the Iditarod. His wife, Paige Drobny, is back in the Iditarod this year. And Cody designs a lot of sleds. You'll see people out there with his sled designs. Some ushers will do their own. So it is possible to buy a top-notch sled from someone. And I want to say that their Dog Paddle Designs website, that's dogpaddledesigns.com, has a lot more information here about what sort of materials are used. And Cody knows as much about anybody about how to make a good sled for dog mushing. And I mentioned that the sleds can get kind of beat up. There are different ways to deal with that. Of course, first of all, you don't want to tip your sled or run into a tree or something like that. So they're out there maneuvering them, and the sled's maneuverability can be a factor because if it's a nice, flexible, lightweight sled, even with a lot of equipment and supplies in there, you're going to be able to turn it and avoid obstacles a lot better than you would maybe on a much stiffer, heavy wooden sled like you would have had back in the day. But sleds do get beat up, so the mushers have to bring along some equipment, some hardware, and they're even allowed to send one sled out somewhere else on the trail if they need to switch their sleds out. So if they can afford it, if they have a nice extra sled or they want to switch to maybe a different style sled for later in the race, that's part of the plan, but you do have to be able to pay to ship it out there. Now, there are differing opinions on that. I just mentioned Cody Strath, his wife Paige Drobny, racing as a veteran again in the Iditarod. She really has a good chance of being a top 10 contender this year. They work on sleds together, and she knows about sleds. We caught up with her at the ceremonial start of the Iditarod in Anchorage, and I just wanted to play this whole interview. It's a few minutes. She discusses the sled issue, but she gets into all kinds of other things about how it feels to be just heading into the Iditarod again. So the part about the sled is coming up, but she will talk about what her thoughts are on either having a spare sled or just being able to take care of the one that you're riding on.
What are you shooting for this race, and what are you expecting?
I'm shooting for Nome, and I'm expecting to get there.
Do you have any personal goals or any goals with the team that you're, is it mostly veterans that you're taking, or is this a younger team?
Veterans, they all just finished the Yukon Quest because both Cody and I ran it. So every dog in my team has, finished the quest this year. I have pretty high hopes for them. It's the best team I've ever brought to this race. We'll just see what we can do. I hope I can keep up with them. It's, more of the challenge.
And how do you feel about the Southern route for the second year in a row?
I didn't run it last year. I did my rookie year on the Southern route. It's the only time I've done it. I love that. I love the route. I love the climb from Shaktiulik over, or from Iditarod over to Shaktiulik. It's a really beautiful and challenging section of trail that my dogs seem to rise to those challenges. So I like having things a little bit harder.
Is it going to change anything for you having 14 instead of 16 from the outset?
No, we run the quest, we're used to 14, and it's, it doesn't change anything for me at all.
And what have you heard about the trail conditions, and have you sort of planned for what you have heard?
It's hard to plan for things now. You already sort of have your plan set, but I'm just going to be running the dog team in front of me, but it sounds like there's a lot of snow out there, which is good. It might be a little bit slower than some years because there is a lot of snow and I'm leaving later in the field. So the first run is probably going to be sugary snow and take a little while. But we'll just take it easy and get it as we come.
What are you most excited for?
Getting on the trail, always. Yeah, I'm excited just to get out there and see. I have a couple of dogs from Cody's team that are 2-year-olds that finished with him and were his kind of main leaders for the Yukon Quest, and so they're dogs that he's been running all year, and so I'm excited to see them perform and see how they do.
Having an inside track on one of like the elite sled builders, do you get like a fancy shiny new sled for Iditarod, or do you guys have your kind of staples that you stick
with?
Well,
that's funny you should ask that, because he did just build me a new sled. And it's the first new sled I've had in probably like 6 years, because he's always busy building for other people. And the sled I had was a hand-me-down from someone else that had, or from Cody. He had built a new sled for himself, and I was like, oh, I'll just take the old one. And so that sled probably had 40 or 50,000 miles on it, and ran the quest and was still stellar. But he thought, it's time for you to have a new sled. So
does Cody build them with little odometers so you can see how far they've gone?
No,
in their
I wish that would be great.
And did you send a second sled out?
No, I never do. I'm confident. I ran the 2014 Iditarod with one sled, and the only thing that broke was my brake bar, and that was aluminum, and now we have steel brake bars, and so I've got a couple bolts, and that's about all I need.
It's really hardcore, Paige. Cool. Anything else you want to add?
No. I'm excited to get on the trail.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks.
That was Paige Drobny of Esther, Alaska, mushing out of Squid Acres Kennels. They call their dogs squids. It's kind of cute. And this is where I want to remind the listeners that you can send us your own questions. You can type those out. Send them to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. If you have any questions about dog mushing or the Iditarod itself, please send those to us. We really like the audio files. We've been getting a lot this year. Much appreciated. The way to send one of those in is a lot of smartphones, they have a voice memo app. You just open that up, record your question in your own voice, and then send that to iditarod@alaskapublic.org, and you might even get in the podcast. Well, folks, that's about all the time we have for today. We are looking forward to more trail reports from Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and KNOM's Ben Matheson as they are out in the field. It'll be real interesting to hear how things go for the mushers heading into Rainy Pass, and then, of course, the notorious Dalzell Gorge and the Farewell Burn. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.